Eklund, solidarity for never. Poland had one of those national events a few years ago that you would think would pull an entire country together. It was a tragedy. It was a plane accident in April 2010, where the Polish president, the first lady, the country's military leaders, dozens of officials and leading Polish writers and thinkers, 96 people all died when their plane crashed in Russia, killing everybody on board. And, you know, from the outside, this was this horrifying thing to witness. People go through, any country go through. But the more complicated thing was what happened inside Poland after the crash. Maybe perhaps you've guessed where this is going. It did not pull the country together. It emphatically did not do that. Amy Drozdowska-McGuire is an American reporter who for the past several years has been living in Poland. She has that story.
To understand the incredibly odd things that happened after the crash, you have to understand that before the crash, Poland was a country divided, split right in half. You started to hear people talk about Poland A and Poland B. Poland A is the wealthier half, less conservative and more educated, more urban and younger, all for being part of the European Union. Poland B is the eastern part of the country, deeply Catholic and conservative, older and poorer, the one suspicious of the EU and the influence of godless Western Europe. Poland A sees Poland B as backwards. Poland B feels like it's the real Poland. And who are these snotty city people in their skinny jeans looking down on them? The split between Poland A and B was also a political split. And the biggest wedge between the two halves was the late president, Lech Kaczyński. Half of the country, Poland A, passionately hated him.
Kartofel, to było na pewno, kurdupel.
The potato, the midget, Napoleon also because of his height. Psychopath, schizophrenic.
This is Dominik Taras. In this story, he's going to be the stand-in for Poland A. He's young, early 20s, born and raised in Warsaw. He's part of the Poland who couldn't stand Kaczyński, thought he was an international embarrassment. And so Poland A liked to embarrass him.
Kaczka, Kaczka.
Yeah, Kaczka, so the duck, I mean, that's another name that we called him.
That last nickname's a play on Kaczyński's surname. Kaczka, a duck. Not a bird exactly befitting the figurehead of a nation that wants to be taken seriously. To Dominik in Poland A, Kaczyński was a blundering xenophobe, anti-EU, mired in the past and holding the country back from a future as part of the West.
Bardzo dobrym prezydentem, był prawym człowiekiem.
Speaking for the other half of Poland, that's Poland B. Here's Ewa Stankiewicz. She's a filmmaker and activist in her early 40s. Tall but slight, with this definite weariness about her. She wears a necklace with a small, delicate cross. And she didn't appreciate those Poland A types, mocking and humiliating Kaczyński.
They made fun of him as much as they could. They took his dignity away from him during his lifetime, but millions of Poles respected him. He was a statesman who was a great patriot.
For Poland B people like Ewa, Kaczyński was a hero, the defender of pure Polishness and national sovereignty in a time when EU integration was starting to threaten that. Kaczyński was their savior. Following the crash, it was as if the whole division between Poland A and Poland B just disappeared. You'd hear it everywhere, on the street, on TV. Slogans like, let's be one, time to stand together. And these were people from two Polands, people who just days earlier would have told you themselves. They kind of hated each other.
Ja czułam jednak taką wspólnotę I takie zjednoczenie się ludzi w Polsce.
I felt a unity between Poles, a unity within the grief and the pain, and that we were living through it together. I felt a closeness between people. And for the first time, I felt, I don't know how to call it, but perhaps a feeling of patriotism.
Budowało w nas duch patriotyzmu, prawda?
It really showed people how to be patriotic. It was almost everyone came together. I mean, I must admit, actually, it's the first time I've ever seen anything like this.
For Dominik, the memory that sticks out the most from this time was the day the country sounded the air raid sirens, signaling the whole nation to stop everything and remember Kaczyński and the other crash victims. Remember, this is for the man half the country hated, including Dominique.
It was absolutely everyone, just everyone came to a standstill. I was actually riding my scooter at the time, so while all the cars around me, they were actually honking their horns in tune or with the sirens at the same time, I was there on my little scooter on the road, but I felt that I also had to like honk my horn even though it was a tiny scooter, so it really wasn't a match for the cars, but you know, I thought I had to do it.
The grief that was reuniting Poland had a center, the presidential palace in Warsaw, sort of like the Polish White House. After the crash, people came there from all over the country, people from Poland A and Poland B, and they held vigil outside the gates for hours at a time. They brought flowers and candles and laid them on the sidewalk in front of the palace. Pretty soon, they completely filled the street. A few days after the plane crash, the Polish scouts, they're like the Polish Boy Scouts, added their own tribute to the sea of flowers and candles, a cross. It was a simple structure, standing about 12 feet high, without color or any ornamentation, made by hand out of wood.
Krzyż w polskiej kulturze.
Now, in Polish culture, the cross has a history which is more than 1,000 years old.
Dobrze, że tam postawiono krzyż.
Putting the cross there is actually, you know, quite a good idea. You have to remember that the cross in our culture is very close to the nation. It's close to our history.
The cross is our identity. It's our culture.
Everyone from Iran was were going there, and it was kind of a duty of every Pole to do that. I mean, this man was our president, no matter which way you look at it. So going there, putting your flowers or wreath down, lighting a candle, this is the way that it should have happened.
Pretty soon, this 12-foot wooden cross became the centerpiece of the entire nation's grief. You'd see the coverage of all the people there on that street, those huge crowds of mourners. And always in the center of the frame was the cross. It didn't take too long, though, just 3 days, in fact, before all this unity started to crack. It was like the end of a long family holiday dinner, when tensions finally start to flare and the same old arguments come out. Kaczynski's family had declared their wish that he be buried at Wawel Castle Cathedral in Krakow, and the church gave its consent. Wawel is kind of like the Polish Westminster, where the country's saints, kings, and national heroes are entombed.
So the Wawel, well, I mean, that's how it all started. The moment when they announced that they were going to bury the presidential couple at the Wawel Cathedral, that's when Poles just kind of split up. The shit hit the fan, that's when it all started.
To get why this caused such a huge uproar, why Dominique and the rest of Poland Day freaked out about this, I have to underline that the kind of people buried at Wawel are the stuff of legends, like kings who slayed dragons, saints who performed miracles. So imagine the reaction when they announced that President Kaczynski and his wife Maria would be buried at Wawel. It was like Poland Day woke up and remembered, wait a minute, we can't stand Kaczynski.
Myślałem, że to jest żart, najzwyklejszy żart. W życiu by mi nie przyszło do głowy.
It was a joke. I really couldn't believe it. We all thought it was a joke. I would have thought that the Wawel, you know, a place which is, you know, holy for all Poles. I mean, it's a symbol of Polish history. It's holy. It's untouchable. I mean, we all thought that, you know, the Wawel's closed. I mean, there's no more room to put any more people inside there, down in the catacombs. Suddenly, well, there's room for Kaczynski. So Kaczynski being buried in the Wawel, it's like he was rewriting the history books. And it's just amazing to think that the decision of one man is able to ruin, you know, 1,000 years of this heritage by deciding to bury Kaczynski there.
In the end, on April 23rd, 13 days after the crash, the late president and his wife were laid to rest at Wawel. So Poland A lost that first round. If the whole Wawel thing was a slap in the face of Poland A, the thing that set off Poland B was the election to replace Kaczynski.
Jarosław Kaczyński, prezydent, jakiego potrzebujemy. Za jego rządów gospodarka szybko rosła, a ludzie poczuli się bezpiecznie.
In the election, Poland B's candidate was, I'm not kidding you, the late president's identical twin brother, Jarosław Kaczyński. If you were with Poland B, you could vote for not just your beloved president's political heir, not just his flesh and blood brother, but a guy who looked exactly like him. Even their own mother could never tell them apart. Poland Day's choice was Bronisław Komorowski, the former parliamentary speaker, the guy who'd taken over as acting head of state after the plane crash. The race was nail-bitingly close, but at the final count, Bronisław Komorowski, Poland Day's choice, won.
Dziękuję wszystkim i proszę o jeszcze więcej.
For Poland A, this was like the restart the country needed, to start moving on and get back to business. But for Poland B, this was a huge blow. Not only was their hero dead, but now they'd lost the power too. By the time of the election, for weeks on end, day and night, Poland B had been holding vigil at the cross. Even after the funeral was long over, even after the period of national mourning had officially ended, the crowds at the presidential palace never stopped. Week after week, the flowers and candles continued to fill the street and pile up around the wooden cross. And Ewa Stankiewicz was there from the start, nearly round the clock, filming it all, talking with the people there. This is from her footage, which she's released as two films, Solidarity 2010 and The Cross.
To byli moi przyjaciele, ja ich naprawdę nie znałam, ja nie mam żadnych koneksji.
Ewa filmed men and women standing out in the rain at 3 a.m. to keep the vigil going. People with tears in their eyes, talking about their grief and loss.
Obcy człowiek, ale w jakiś sposób wiedziałam, czułam, że moja odpowiedzialność za nasz kraj, był prezydentem.
And then, after just a few days, things started to shift. When you watch the interviews, you start to see this hint of something different in the faces of people. That shift from composed sadness to something closer to fear, an edge that starts to underline their voices. There's this one word that starts coming up and keeps coming up. Zamach. Assassination.
Zamach terrorystyczny na prezydenta.
Czy to był zamach?
To nie był zamach.
People start bringing up the idea that the plane crash was no accident, and the dark figure looming behind all this fear is Russia. They were behind all this. If anyone has reasons to not trust the Russians, Poland's got them. More than a century of war and brutal occupation by Russia, communism and the unrelenting paranoia of living in a police state, those kinds of reasons. For Poland A, though, this is history, and they're all about looking forward. Whereas for Poland B, this is all very much alive. For them, Russia is still a threat. This is actually a huge part of why Poland B loves the late President Kaczynski. He was a hardliner when it came to Russia. As a matter of fact, he wouldn't even speak with Russians, wouldn't be in the same room with them. He was Poland B's anti-Russian hero. And the new president, Poland A's Komorowski, was in league with the enemy.
They saw him as a kind of a Russian envoy, a spy, someone like who isn't worthy of becoming president of Poland, who actually has no moral right to become president of Poland.
At one point, Poland B people actually started spreading this weird rumor that Komorowski wasn't a real Pole, that actually he was descended from a murdering Bolshevik grandfather who slit the throats of the real Komorowskis and usurped the family name. So the new president wasn't even Polish. He was secretly Russian. And if that sounds nuts to you, that Russia would have killed the Polish president, here's how the facts lined up for the Poles. The plane crash happened in Russia. And even more than that, the plane full of all those Polish elite, political leaders, financial heads, writers, they were on their way to commemorate the massacre of another group of Polish elite in the Second World War. More than 20,000 murdered in the woods, and the whole thing covered up for decades. Also, remember the trauma of their history with Russia is very recent. Moscow controlled Poland until 1989. So this idea that the Russians were at it again seemed entirely plausible to lots of people. Even a Poland A guy like Dominik told me, sure, he thinks the plane crash was just an unfortunate accident. But listen, a lot of crazy stuff went down during communism. It's a perfectly reasonable thing to think the Russians might be behind it. The Poland B didn't stop with a few reasonable suspicions. You started to hear elaborate conspiracy theories and secret plots to destroy the nation. Like any group rallying around a cause, Poland B adopted a symbol, the cross. That simple wooden cross the Polish Boy Scouts put up had officially become the symbol of their country in crisis. All their grief, all their fear went into those wooden beams. It was a bit like when the cross became the symbol of a free Poland during Solidarity in the 80s, a symbol for the country's united fight against the communists. This time, though, the Poland B people by the cross felt abandoned, turned on by their own countrymen, while Poland A, everybody else, was starting to feel uncomfortable, impatient. With Poland A and Poland B starting to go after each other again, things there in front of the cross were starting to get ugly. Violence started happening, at first in small ways. Drunk young people would stumble out of the nearby bars in the area and mock the Poland B people praying by the cross. They'd curse them out or even physically attack them.
There was an example of a young man who kicked a woman. I don't think she'd even been praying for a very long time, but a lot of passers-by knelt down to pray as they passed, and I think she was one of those. There was another incident of a woman who was pushed and she fell, and she nearly cracked open her head on the pavement. There were incidents of people putting out their cigarettes on the necks of people.
Dominik in Poland A, though, saw this violence differently. The way he saw it, it was the cross people who were out of control. They were embarrassing, hostile, and it was starting to seem like they were never going to leave.
I didn't want to go there. I mean, the atmosphere was just too aggressive. I mean, you'd go there and like you'd immediately be accused of being a spy or, you know, being, you know, sent by Moscow to be there or something. I mean, there was even an anecdote going around at that time that about the cross, that even if Jesus had come for the cross, they would have said, you know, what are you doing here, you Jew? Get out of here.
You see, this is when Poland A started to feel like it was time. Time for those hostile people to stop camping out in a public street day and night like they owned the place. To take down the giant cross standing in front of a secular government building. The plan to take away the cross was careful, diplomatic. It would be done with the utmost respect. It would be taken to a place of honor, the nearby Church of St. Anne. The right people would be there to do the job. Catholic priests, church leaders, and Polish Boy Scouts. The very people who had put the cross there in the first place. So with that plan in place, the day came to take down the cross. And on that day, all hell broke loose. Truckloads of police were there, thousands of protesters pushing against the barricades erected around the cross. They were chanting and holding signs that said, "If you're a Pole, then come with us," and "Komorowski, traitor of the state," and "It's our cross, it's our cross." At one point, a woman tied herself to the cross with rope and started shouting that the cross is a symbol of the 96 people who died in the catastrophe, that we won't let it be taken away. When the priests and scouts showed up, people started screaming at them. They chanted, "Defend the cross," and shouted at them, calling them Judas, Judas, and Gestapo. Keep in mind, these were the conservative, older, very Catholic people of Poland B, shouting Judas at priests who were there to move a cross, calling them Nazis.
The key thing for me, which really got me angry, was the fact that they were offending scouts and priests. I mean, these are people for the public good. So why are these people being, you know, shouted at and slandered? Only someone, you know, without a soul or a mind, you know, could do something like this. You know, you had to be really kind of an animal to be throwing such, you know, slanderous comments at these people who are only doing, you know, good for other people around.
Harcerze byli kompletnie zdezorientowani.
The scouts were totally disorientated. They had tears in their eyes. And the people started calling out to them and to the priests not to do it, not to take the cross away. And they asked the priests to start praying with them. And the people started praying and the priests joined them in prayer.
Some people started pushing through the police barriers put up for the occasion. And police tried to push them back. Then the police brought out the pepper spray and things got even more nuts.
Dziadkowie po prostu z rękami.
You could see these granddads, you know, with their fisticuffs with the other people. You got grandmothers, elderly women, like, you know, beating people with their walking sticks almost. They broke through the barriers and they were rallying people to, you know, come and defend the cross, you know, come with us.
Things got so out of control that in the end, the government officials in charge of the operation had to call the whole thing off. The cross stayed put. It's not what happened that day they tried to take the cross that really surprised me, that shocked me into seeing a meanness within the country that I didn't think existed, was possible, that really brought out the very worst in people. It was what happened after, when Dominik Taras, Poland for Poland Day, threw a party. A huge Facebook-led event attended by thousands. Those Poland A people who said to Poland B, if you're going to pull a protest like that, fine. Then we're going to protest your protest. It was the exact opposite of all this angry, unyielding earnestness. They dressed up as sumo wrestlers, put on Star Wars costumes, and danced there in the streets in front of the cross defenders. They tossed around a beach ball. They did the wave. They blew bubbles and sang children's nursery rhymes. They waved around signs like, take down the presidential palace. It's getting in the way of the cross. But then it changed. It stopped being so lighthearted. It felt more like one group mocking another's most sincere beliefs, their deepest fears. Like when I saw a bunch of Poland A people parading around a cross made out of beer cans. And another person dressed up as a bishop in robes made out of toilet paper. And then the duck came out.
I mean, there was like a cuddly toy in the shape of a duck, right? With a nice allusion to the surname of the Kaczyński brothers.
Żółtą kaczkę.
Kaczka, which means duck in Polish. And this duck was tossed around like a football and ripped apart.
It was quite, you know, emotional, I would say. This duck was being kind of tossed around, and then, you know, suddenly someone grabbed it and ripped off a leg here and ripped off a leg there. You know, and by the end of it, you know, the whole thing was in shreds and all the filling was like up in the air, like, and all the feathers from the inside, this kind of guts were kind of floating around in the air.
Krzycząc i skandując jeszcze jeden.
People were shouting one more, which meant that they were calling for the death of the second Kaczyński, his brother.
Well, that's her interpretation of one more. Dominik saw it another way.
Jeszcze jeden, jeszcze jeden.
Give us one more, give us one more. Yeah, and then someone just threw another one in there.
No strasznie się czułam, bo to jest...
It felt terrible to wish death onto someone. It's not something I'd wish on my worst enemy.
Let me just say here, I'm of Polish descent. I've lived in Poland off and on for a few years now. And this is where I felt like I didn't know this country anymore. For me, Poland's a tough love kind of place. Grandmothers yelling at you to dress your kid more warmly. Hard on itself, but deeply sincere. Decent. Where the local version of the TV show Big Brother never really took off because Poles thought it was mean in a way that made them uncomfortable. Their version of So You Think You Can Dance is You Can Dance. It's like, in the end, they want to watch each other succeed, not tear each other down. And I always thought this Poland A, Poland B thing was an anomaly. Something they'd all get over. Post-communist growing pains. But it's just started to occur to me that maybe this is what post-communist means. This is democracy. They traded a common enemy and a common cause for a system that pits them against their fellow citizens and turns their own countrymen into their worst enemies. That whole thing about coming together after a tragedy, that tragedy brings people closer together, that it brings out their best, it can work the other way too. It can bring out the worst and drive people apart. Especially when it's your own country, your family. Your family, your own countrymen, they're the ones who have the real power to destroy you. Komorowski kept trying to come up with ideas to take down the cross, offered compromises, all of which were shot down. At one point, he tried a plaque, one that honored Lech Kaczynski and all the victims of the plane crash. They put it right on the outside front wall of the presidential palace. The plaque itself even had a good-sized cross on it. Defenders of the cross were not impressed. A 71-year-old man threw a jar of his own feces at it. In the end, the cross simply disappeared. In the wee hours of a Thursday morning in late September, guards quietly and unceremoniously came to the cross, took it down, and carried it inside the palace. Before anybody realized what was happening, before anyone could stop them. A non-event. It's now finally at the Church of St. Anne, as originally planned. The two sides have continued, in small ways, to keep up the fight. Right where the cross stood at the palace, a group meets to pray every night at 9 p.m. Eva Stankiewicz is often with them. People are constantly leaving crosses. The authorities take them away, but people just bring more. Dominique told me there's even one on wheels that they pull around, bring out, hide, bring it out again. To this empty space in front of a government building that people are still trying to fill.
Amy Drozdowska-McGuire in Warsaw.